From the start, Phone Losers of America seemed different from most other hacking groups. PLA offered no high-minded justifications for its illegal activities and no ideological bullshit, which most hacking groups had in the spades. PLA was less about technical wizardry and more about practical applications. PLA was all about pranks and somewhat malicious activities, goofy stunts, over-the-top revenge schemes, and simple technical tricks intended to drive a mark completely batty. The best thing about PLA, in my opinion, was the much greater emphasis on humor. PLA was the Three Stooges of the hacker community. Colonel Panic. What can I say?
On my telephone.
I don't know what to say.
On my telephone.
Well, I could call you by your name. Oh, I could even call you with another name, but I'm gonna call you Cactus. That's right, I could call you Cacti. What have you done with the phones? My mother asked as I walked through the door. I'd been in school all day and had no idea what she was talking about. The phones company has been calling me all day, she said, trying to figure out what you've done to your phone number. They think your line is a payphone. I had my own private phone number in my room. Normally my answering machine picked up my calls, but sometimes for fun I would forward my number to other numbers, such as dial a story, time and temperature, or miscellaneous payphones. Recently I had started forwarding my line to various phone company test numbers. These were special phone numbers set up by the phone company that had all kinds of error recordings and other fun things on them that phone company technicians used for testing purposes. The first one I'd ever called was the sweep tone. A friend of mine gave this number to me years earlier, telling me that it was a number to detect phone taps on your line. This, of course, wasn't true, but it was still such a cool number which made a bizarre noise. Boop! Years after that, my friend Shauna introduced me to loops. There were two phone companies that connected to each other, so one person called one line and another person called the other. Then they could talk to each other. Before I had my own phone line, I used these to talk to girls from school late at night. Since most teenagers weren't allowed to receive late-night phone calls, myself included, we'd arrange to call each other at predetermined times on the loop numbers. The sweep tone ended with the digits 9998, and the loop numbers ended with 9991 and 9992. Immediately after learning about the loops, I knew there must be other interesting things buried in that particular phone exchange, so I called every number from 9900 to 9999 in that exchange and found dozens of interesting phone company recordings. Most of them were various error recordings, and one played the really loud off-hook signal. Another seemed to be a room monitor for what I assumed was the phone company central office a few miles away from us. I could hear machinery running inside, and occasionally I'd hear an employee in the room. These numbers were cool, but my favorite one was the one that said,
"The call you have made requires a 25-cent deposit. Please hang up, deposit 25 cents, and try your call again."
This is apparently what the phone company stumped all day, the simple act of using call forwarding to send my calls to the payphone recording. Some lady had called my phone number earlier in the day in response to an ad I had in the paper. Hearing the recording asking her to deposit 25 cents made her think that something was wrong with her phone line, so she called Illinois Bell to report the problem. A technician checked her line to determine that everything was okay. Then she called my phone number for the technician. Well, according to my mom and the one flustered Illinois Bell lady I spoke to, this threw the phone company into complete turmoil for most of the day. As hard as they tried, they couldn't understand how my line could possibly cause the recording to play. They thought the line had somehow been turned into an actual payphone line, and they couldn't figure out why they weren't able to switch it back to a regular line. Since I wasn't sure I wasn't even allowed to call the number in the first place, I lied to the lady at Illinois Bell and just said I had to please deposit 25 cents recording on my answering machine. I promised her that I would change my message since it was causing so much confusion there. Boop! She said she would have the guy in charge of my case call me back the next day, but he never did. He probably felt pretty foolish spending so much time and energy on something that turned out to be an answering machine message. My mother, who normally didn't care for my telephone antics, actually seemed amused by the whole incident. Throughout the years following this incident, I continued to find call forwarding extremely useful and entertaining, not just by forwarding my own line, but by forwarding other people's lines as well. I started doing this while attempting to wire myself large amounts of cash via Western Union using stolen credit card numbers. I ordered call forwarding for a person's number, and then I would call that person and talk them into dialing the codes that forwarded their phone line to a payline I was at. Any calls they would receive would go straight to my payphone, so I was able to answer the verification call from Western Union. The first time I put call forwarding to any kind of use was in 1993. At that time, I lived in Indianapolis and worked as a movie theater. The first time I put call forwarding to any kind of fun use was in 1993. At the time, I lived in Indianapolis and worked at a movie theater. I decided one day it'd be fun to screw with customers that called into the movie announcement line. Instead of customers hearing the recording with movie times, they could talk to me. Rather than get myself fired by answering the phone at the theater I worked at, well, I picked some other random theater to pull this prank on. I settled for a place several hundred miles away in another state. After ordering call forwarding for the theater's line, I just had to call the theater's manager and talk him into dialing the proper numbers. I did this by impersonating a phone company repair technician. I explained that we had been having problems with their line and that I needed him to dial a number that would complete a test on their line. The manager was happy to help out, and as soon as he did, the payphone next to me rang. I picked it up and informed the manager that the test was in progress, and we'd call him back if there were any more issues. Boop! As the evening approached, I started receiving phone calls from customers. I spent the next several hours making up fictional movie titles and claiming to have sequels that didn't exist yet. I told customers that the theater had been destroyed by meteor the previous night. I yelled at others for bothering me while I was trying to sell tickets and shocked them a lot with made-up insane policies and movie prices.
We're the only theater in town, ma'am. It's not like you can go to one of our competitors.
The call forwarding on the theater's line lasted until late at night. The theater employees had no idea that anything was amiss until angry customers started showing up at the theater, demanding to know which one of their employees had been so rude to them. It took another hour after this for them to notice that their phone line was being picked up by someone else. It then even took even longer for the phone company to understand how it was happening and turn off the call forwarding. I know all this because I called the theater the next day, pretending to be with the phone company and asking the manager to tell me everything that had happened. At some point during my stay in Indianapolis, I discovered the phone company's newest feature, remote access call forwarding. It worked just like regular call forwarding, but allowed me to forward the lines on my own. Instead of relying on the owner of a phone number to do it for me, all it required was a 4-digit PIN code that the phone company allowed me to pick up myself over the phone as I was setting up the feature. I would explain that I wanted the same PIN number that was on my calling card, and they would be more than happy to accommodate me. How could they have possibly expected like this to not be abused? When you called a forwarded phone number, the original number would ring a half ring. Then it would forward to whatever line it was programmed to ring. This is so that whoever was present at the original number would know that their calls were being forwarded somewhere. At least that's what the idea was. Most people didn't know what to expect or think when their phone would half ring, and nobody was ever there when they picked up. Most Americans don't use call forwarding. Boop. While working at Lafayette Square Mall's movie theater, I came up with a plan that seemed really interesting at the time, though I couldn't get any of my coworkers to share my enthusiasm for it. I wanted to order remote access call forwarding for all of the businesses in the mall that were visible from the movie theater's concession stand. My plan was to initiate a call of forwarded numbers, causing every phone with an earshot to do a half ring, one after another. I would forward the clothing line to the pretzel place to Orange Julius to the shoe store, and so on. I would make a complete call forwarding circle, which would perpetually half ring every phone in the wing of the mall. It almost worked. Making a complete chain of numbers just gave a busy signal, so I had to break the chain by removing the forward on the last number. Each phone would only ring once, but they wouldn't continue ringing forever like I'd hoped. When I called the first number, it started working just like I'd planned. Each number gave a half ring until the forward reached the last number, where someone answered the phone. I hung up and did it several times, instructing my coworkers at the theater to keep calling it while I stood at various places in the mall, listening for the ring to happen at each store. Ultimately, the results were pretty disappointing. The problem was that most of the store's phones just weren't very loud, not to mention that my hopes for creating the perpetual half-ring didn't work at all. If it had, I'd planned to forward every single number in the mall, making every store's phone ring with just one phone call. It's too bad the phone company wouldn't let me forward payphone lines. It's too bad the phone company wouldn't let me forward payphone lines. I could have created quite a show with large banks of payphones at the Indianapolis airport. Oh, Brad. Regardless of my recent disappointment, I still find, occasionally, ways to keep myself entertained with call forwarding. There were two major theater chains in Indianapolis, Act 3 and Lowe's. I worked for Act 3. My manager told me a story about him and some employees writing "Lowe's sucks" on Act 3 giant marquees next to a major highway. They only did it so they could quick snap a picture of it and then take it down. It was this story that inspired me to play my own prank on Lowe's, thinking my manager would find it just as hilarious as I did. Well, man, was I wrong. There were four Lowe's theaters in Indianapolis, and I ordered remote access call forwarding for all of them. I then forwarded all their movie announcement lines to Mann's Chinese Theater in Hollywood, California. Anyone trying to call the Lowe's Theater for showtime would end up hearing the times for Mann's instead. The recording clearly stated that it was the historic theater in Hollywood. With Mann's higher prices and address on Hollywood Boulevard, this prank was sure to confuse any Lowe's customers that called in to see what was playing in Indianapolis. After the forwarding was working on all four theaters, I went up to my manager's office and tossed a phone book onto his desk, open to the page of theater listings.
"Call Lowe's,"
I said with a smile.
"Why should I do that?"
he replied slowly.
"Just call one of the numbers and see what you get."
He dialed the number, not sure what to expect. His face shifted from curiosity to confusion, and finally to complete shock.
How did you change their greeting?"
he asked me, obviously a little panicked. When I explained to him that I didn't change their greeting, that I simply forwarded their phone lines across the country, he was horrified. Above all things, he was worried that he was going to be charged for the long-distance call to California. I assured him that Lowe's was picking up the long-distance tab for everyone who called the theater that night. Even so, he was still upset. He couldn't believe what I had done, and he demanded that I fix it immediately. His next concern, that what I did would be traced back to the theater, and he would end up getting fired for it. No matter how much I reassured him, he just didn't see the humor in what I'd done. I went out to a payphone to fix it, and he settled down. But since I already had called forwarding on Lowe's numbers, I sure had fun with them over the following weeks, answering calls for their customers. Boop! I didn't realize it at the time, but my manager's concerns over the long-distance charges being passed through the call forwarding weren't completely unwarranted. A couple years later, I began calling forwarding numbers to a 1-900 number so I could dial a local number and be connected to a psychic or an adult phone line for free. It turned out that some of these places could see what number we were calling from, even when we were dialing through the forwarded number. The 1-900 lines would bill a number that we forwarded, but occasionally one would manage to bill our number and the forwarded number at the same time. This caused the 1-900 service to be paid twice for our call, and it caused major confusion with the phone company. I had a 1-900 block on my home phone, which prevented me from making calls to 1-900 numbers, but since I was calling the local number to reach these 1-900 services, the block didn't matter. That is, until some of these 1-900 services began billing me for the calls. Once again, call forwarding confused the heck out of the phone company, which couldn't understand how the 1-900 charges could show up on my bill when I had a 1-900 block on my line. As far as they were concerned, this was impossible. One morning, an employee from Southwestern Bell called me up, and he stuttered the whole time because he was so confused about the charges and didn't seem to know exactly to ask me about what was going on. Well, I played dumb with him and claimed that I would never have a reason to call 1-900 number since I was a devout Christian. They agreed to remove the charges from my bill since I obviously had the 1-900 block on my line, but they called me several times after that to question me further, even though they never accused me of doing it myself. They just didn't understand how it could be happening and were hoping for some type of answer. We just had to learn which 1-900 services would pass along our number and which ones wouldn't. This ended up being determined by which long-distance carrier the 1-900 company was using. We had a lot of fun bridging adult phone services operators on the line and trying to get them to talk with each other. We also used three-way calling to give all of our friends free psychic readings. It's funny how those psychics never seemed to use their psychic powers to figure out that we were committing phone fraud. It's when I found out the number for BBS-900 that things started to get really out of control. BBS-900 was a service for owners of computer built and board systems who wanted to charge a membership for their fee to their users. They would instruct their users to call a certain 1-900 number, which would charge $25 to the user's phone bill. This charge would pay for the user's access to the bulletin board service, and each month, the owner of the bulletin board would receive a check from the BBS-900 for all the money he'd earned from the 1-900 charges. I signed up for it as soon as I found it. I ran a computer bulletin board, and I had no intentions of trying to charge my users for a fee. Instead, I was going to use call forwarding to make myself rich. For each call to my 1-900 number, I would earn $20 of the $25 fee. In the first month, I made 4 fraudulent calls to it just to test it out. Slightly over a month later, I received a check for $80. I took it to the bank, cashed it, and asked for 2 rolls of quarters. Throughout the week, I stopped in by every payphone I encountered, making several calls to a local phone number, which forwarded my 1-900 number. I had 80 quarters on me and used all of them to make 80 calls to my number. It seemed like a foolproof way to make $1,600 in 1 week. I planned to wait until I received my $1,600 check before pouring any more money into it, just to make sure it worked. No reason to get greedy with it, right? Once again, mass confusion ensued at the phone company, and I never received my money. A month after making those 80 calls, I called BBS-900 to ask why I hadn't received my check yet. And they told me that the phone company had been calling them all month, wanting to know how someone could be possibly calling their 1-900 numbers from a bunch of payphones. From what the lady told me, the phone company had no clue at all how it could be happening, which put an abrupt end to my dreams of building a massive fortune for my very own 1-900 number. Besides getting free adult phone services and psychic calls, I used call forwarding to get free long distance too. While working as a telemarketer at a portrait studio in Texas, I began forwarding dozens of their phone lines to out-of-state numbers that I commonly called. The portrait studio lines were only used for outgoing calls, so they didn't notice there was a problem until they received the next phone bill. I forwarded some lines to a computer bulletin board system, and others were sent to just chat lines or 1-900 numbers. Whenever I wanted to call one of those numbers, I would just call the corresponding telemarketer line to connect me. A few weeks after quitting the job, the forwarding disappeared. I could still forward numbers remotely, but that was a hassle considering the amount of phone calls I made each day, and I would have to change the forwarding number before every call. Boop. It was around this time that I found out that I could forward a local business number to AT&T's calling card access number, which could then be used to make free calls with my calling cards and credit cards. Of course, these were cards I'd either ordered for people or other numbers I took for my various jobs. Since the calls were technically made from the forwarded line, I never ended up getting charged back for them. Instead, the business line that I forwarded would have to deal with it. I usually picked up a secondary phone number at a business that never received calls such as credit card machine lines. The line would remain forwarded to AT&T's calling card number, usually for a few weeks, until the owner of the store noticed the extra charges on their bill and immediately had it removed. This worked great for a year until I was arrested for it. Looking back, you would think that something like this would be simple for the phone company to figure out. A bunch of fraudulent calls turn up on a subscriber's line right around the time that someone mysteriously ordered call forwarding for them. It was pretty obvious what was going on, right? But call forwarding never failed to perplex a phone company employee. While living in Albany, Oregon, in 1996, a cop and a detective appeared at the door demanding to search my room. After having half of my room packed into the police car, I went into the police station to talk to the detective about the 10,000 in fraudulent calls that they traced to me. I was cooperative with the detective, and he was nice enough to tell me exactly how they tracked me down and how completely unhelpful the phone company was. It turned out that many of the local people who were finding unauthorized charges on their credit cards for phone calls they didn't make were calling the police and filing reports about it. The police started investigating the charges, and everything seemed to point to the number that they thought the calls were coming from, which was a local business. When diverting my calls through AT&T, they always had to ask which number I was calling from. I gave them the same number every time, which turned out to be a local company. I only picked the number because the last four digits spelled out my name. Boop! The police and company launched an investigation into the employees that worked there. After determining that none of the employees were responsible, the phone company suggested that someone was probably hooking up a phone to the phone box outside of their business. I imagined the police stalking out the business for days, keeping an eye on the business's phone box, and hoping to catch the elusive phone fraudster. They finally ruled out the possibility and came to the conclusion that they were dealing with a big-time hacker who was using a computer to hack into the phone's company switches that they couldn't be traced. The detective, determined to figure out who it was, resorted to calling every single phone number that was showing up on the credit card bills. Mostly these were calls to a public party line for hackers called the DEFCON voice bridge, and a lot of computer bulletin board systems, which were all dead ends for the detective. Finally, the detective noticed a few calls to the Target's public relations office in Minnesota. I worked at Target at the time and had called them on several occasions. The detective called Target's office and asked the lady who had called them from the Albany area on a certain date. The lady was nice enough to give him my name and address. I didn't end up with any jail time, but I was fined $250 as a punishment for the estimated $10,000 in the fraudulent phone calls I'd made. After it was all over, they returned all of my confiscated property. That officially ended the fraudulent credit card habits, my 1-900 cards, and most of my call forwarding experiments.